Paige Albiniak, Editorial Director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. You can subscribe to the Daily Brief Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you are enjoying us, please head over to Apple Podcasts and give us all the stars. That lets other people find us. Today, I am welcoming Arlen Marmel. He is General Manager of audience-focused aggregation platform Verve, which is spelled capital V, capital R, capital V. And Verve features premium subscription video on demand channels such as Crunchyroll, Funimation, Rooster Teeth, Drama Fever, Shudder, and more. The service has just launched a new slate of programming, which includes classic Warner Brothers animation series such as Freakazoid, as well as Road Rovers, Dragon's Lair, and Dust. Hello, Arlen, and welcome.
Hi, Paige. Thanks so much for having me, and I appreciate you getting Verve right. Everyone says VRV, so it's a constant challenge for us. It's a cat and mouse game of finding people saying VRV and then telling them it's Verve.
I really wanted to say VRV, I'm not going to lie.
I understand the temptation.
I mean, that's how it's written. Anyway, so let's just kick it off with the most obvious question, which is, what the heck is audience-focused aggregation platform?
Cool. Yeah, it's kind of unique. And I think it's something, you know, it's sort of a responsibility we've taken on to explain this. And I tend to think we're at the front of the game. You know, I don't think we're going to be the only one. But our view is that, you know, you sort of have these broad market platforms, almost utilities in Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon. And what that leaves out is really passionate audiences that want to engage on a deeper level. You know, if you think about what those big guys are doing, by definition, they're trying to have something for everyone. And our focus is really to be everything to someone. So when we look at Verve, we're trying to create an experience for a particular audience that is second to none. And that definitely starts with premium video content, but it also extends beyond that. So our goals, you know, expand beyond content to community and commerce. Because often when you're dealing with a passionate audience, they don't just want to watch the content. They want to talk to other fans about that content. They sometimes define themselves by that content, and they might want to wear the shirt. They might want to go to an event, and we want to give them all those opportunities. So it's really about delivering an unparalleled experience for fans of a certain audience. And for us, that's really anime, animation, science fiction, fantasy type genres. And really, it's more of a psychographic. It's sort of a group of people that are living a very particular lifestyle. And we don't love labels, and our audience doesn't love labels, but they know who they are.
So prior to coming to Verve, you ran marketing and distribution for Crunchyroll, which is now one of the services offered on Verve, if I'm correct. So just
yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about Crunchyroll and what lessons you learned there? I love the name of that service, by the way. What lessons you learned there that you are now applying to Verve? Because Verve is sort of a bigger iteration of Crunchyroll, really.
Yeah, so we're one company, Elation. We're comprised of both Crunchyroll and Verve. And I think, you know, we're very, very fortunate to have this service, Crunchyroll, that is now over 10 years into its life, that is a pretty much a market leader for niche streaming services. And Crunchyroll, as I mentioned in relation to Verve, really starts with premium video content, but expands beyond it. You know, we have Crunchyroll Expo, we have Anime Night at the Movies, the Crunchyroll Awards, we have a commerce store, we now have a games business. And so we're really engaging with the audience on multiple levels. And we saw this opportunity and this passion and frankly, depth of engagement, and recognized that there were other areas to expand beyond anime. Crunchyroll has a really strong brand, is really well known within the anime community, and we were fortunate to be able to build from that foundation. And so we initially partnered with Funimation to really create basically the world's best anime offering on Verve. And then we started to talk to other partners and expand beyond that. So Rooster Teeth was a very early partner. We brought Shudder on later. More recently, we've added Drama Fever. And we also launched a house channel called Verve Select, where we basically program mostly exclusive content for Verve. So it's kind of like a sweetener for our overall bundle. But the key thing that we took away from really this Crunchyroll experience is, if Crunchyroll didn't exist, you know, there's anime on Netflix, there's anime on Hulu, but if Crunchyroll didn't exist, I think there would be sort of a Crunchyroll-shaped hole in the hearts of many fans out there. And we see that, and we see that opportunity, and we say, okay, the world would be pretty cold and lonely if all there was Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and these other utilities. So we're trying to provide an experience that starts with content and expands beyond it. And I think Crunchyroll gave us that seedling, that sort of proof point that this was possible. And then we wanted to take the leap into other genres and other adjacent categories and really build from the magic of Crunchyroll and try to create a little bit of a broader community, albeit one that certainly is not intended to appeal to everyone.
So I had written this down. I'm not going to get into this too much because it's a little technical for people, but Verve is owned by Alaysia Media, which in turn is owned by Otter Media, which in turn is owned by, it's a partnership of Chernin Group and AT&T. Right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. So it's a lot to unpack. You guys also seem to have a lot of programming relationships with Warner Brothers, because with the Warner Brothers animation and I think Drama Fever, can you just tell me a little bit about those distribution arrangements?
Sure. To date, Verve, other than our Crunchyroll relationship, because we are one company with Crunchyroll, Verve has done, you know, basically arm's length partnerships with all of our different partners. So these are all distribution deals whereby, and they're kind of unique deals. And I think it's interesting because what I see in the marketplace today is if you're a distributor of content, you have a couple choices. You can either launch your own owned and operated service. You could distribute that through a streaming channel store like Amazon. Or you could sell your stuff to a Netflix or a Hulu, which is more of an unbranded type of play. And there's certainly an intermediary there in terms of you and the audience. And then there's Verve, which really allows you to have your owned and operated experience, distribute in streaming channel stores like Amazon, and then participate in this bundle. So in our view, it's kind of another leg of the stool. So for partners, when we talk to them, particularly partners that have either a current, you know, direct-to-consumer streaming service or an aspiration to have one, I think we have a really compelling pitch in terms of, you know, paying them for their programming and offering something that is incremental to what they are doing today. On the other hand, if you're just selling content, we can also absorb that. I mentioned our Verve Select house channel. So we're really able to work with anyone, which I think makes us unique. If you think about, say, Netflix, you know, their position is sort of, hey, sell this to us and it's kind of a Netflix original, or your originating network brand isn't going to be very present, or don't, and go do your own thing and sort of be a competitor. I think in our view, we don't think of the world quite so black and white. It's a bit grayer. And so we're willing to work with partners of all shapes and sizes. And frankly, we really want to support this streaming ecosystem. And we really want to see other direct-to-consumer branded streaming services thrive, above and beyond the Netflixes, Hulus, and Amazons of the world.
And then just, this is a 101 question, but let's say I wanted to subscribe to Crunchyroll, but I did not want Drama Fever or I did not want Shudder. You can subscribe to each network sort of as a one-off, and or you can subscribe to a bundle, or how does that work?
Sure. So there's actually two ways. If you sort of want Crunchyroll, you say, hey, I'm a Crunchyroll fan and I'm not really interested in all this other content, you can either go directly to Crunchyroll and subscribe, or you can go to Verve and we sell the Crunchyroll offering a la carte. If you go to Crunchyroll, you know, there's a whole community there. That experience is really built around the subtitled anime super fan. And so the way I think about it is, if you're a super fan of any of the, you know, or put differently, a fanatic of any of the individual services, I think, frankly, you should go to the owned and operated experience, because let's take Shudder as another example. No one is going to do a better job of catering to Shudder fans directly than Shudder. It's a full 360 rich experience around horror and the other genres that they play in. With that said, if you come to Verve, you're getting, you know, access to all of this different programming, access to a broader community. And frankly, in the case of Crunchyroll and Crunchyroll only, if you subscribe to the Verve bundle, you can take your credentials and go log in on Crunchyroll. So, you know, you can think of it as, hey, for $7, I only really want access to subtitled anime, and Crunchyroll offers that. Or you could say, for $10, I want access to all this great stuff, but I still want to use the Crunchyroll app for one reason or another, and you can use your Verve credentials to go to Crunchyroll. So, you know, one of our key ideas is really consumer choice. And that's why we offer all of our individual channels a la carte. We offer you the ability to subscribe to a bundle. In the case of Crunchyroll, we offer, you know, access on Verve, or you could take your credentials and go watch on Crunchyroll. So it's really, really about this idea of consumer choice.
Okay, I'm glad I asked that, actually, because that was more complicated than I thought. So one of the things that you have brought up so far that I think is really interesting is this concept of tapping into fan engagement and sort of using that fan engagement to, maybe more crass than I mean it, but to drive the service, i.e. you're creating this community, and then that sort of in turn keeps the community engaged and keeps them subscribed. So can you talk about what you guys do around fan engagement as a marketing tool?
Sure. First of all, I think you have to think about what being a fan means. And it starts with authenticity and depth of engagement. And I think that that's really hard for general market media brands to solve for, because even if you have a little bit of science fiction or a little bit of anime or a little bit of, you know, adult-oriented animation, I think it's really hard to solve for that super fan experience. Because of the two things I mentioned, authenticity and depth of engagement. It's hard to be really authentic if you aren't of the community and you aren't solely focused on that community. And then in terms of depth of engagement, you really are trying to provide many different touch points. So for us, you know, when we think about our audience, we're thinking about what events can we be at? What kinds of rich experiences can we offer them? So let's take the example of Crunchyroll, and I mentioned the Anime Awards. We innovated around creating this annual, think of an Oscars, Tonys, Grammys type event that specifically gives out awards, both creative and technical, for the anime community. And we think that there are other gaps like that. And some of it will be done by us here at Elation solely, but some of it will be done in partnership with our partners. So, you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting about Verve is, you know, by definition, when you're kind of focused on a passionate fandom, your community is going to be a little bit smaller, obviously, than general audience. And you might be a little bit more resource constrained. So we talk a lot about this idea of better together and things that we can do collectively as a community. So we work really closely with our partners to help them get to events, for example, that they couldn't get to otherwise. So Verve will have a presence at we were just at C2E2. That's a great example. And most of our partners, frankly, weren't in attendance there and couldn't be because either of means or resources or, you know, who knows what. And so Verve had a presence there. We had an event gallery or an art gallery, I should say, where it was this tunnel, this beautiful tunnel that you walked into that had this incredible lighting. And we had unique art pieces that represented our different channels and different content partners, and they were commissioned from various artists. Some of our channel partners contributed to it, and fans were able to walk through and have this interactive experience, and thousands of fans came through. We were able to both spotlight Verve, but also our partners in ways that I think are really authentic and unique. And I think those are the kinds of things that we can do, both because we understand the audience on a deeper level, but also because we are working with our partners to shine the spotlight on not just Verve and not just the Verve brand, but also their content and their channel brand. Because we recognize that if you're a Shudder, if you're a Crunchyroll, a Funimation, and so on, you really understand your audience to a degree that it would be hard for us to do without you. And so we want to support and kind of buttress their capabilities. We are in no way, shape, or form trying to access the content without the brand value, because again, we really understand and recognize how important those programming capabilities are, how important that authenticity and those brands can be to the audience. So we're trying to really get towards this concept of better together.
So something that's been really fascinating me lately, and I'm going to take it from this kind of niche streaming world into the larger media world, but this, so I don't know if you watch Westworld, but HBO, they're doing kind of the same thing that happened with Game of Thrones, and it's happened with other shows too, like Lost, where these fan communities have grown around the show. You know, there'll be a lot of podcasts, there's Reddit streams or whatever you call those, and just a lot of community engagement around the show, and that engagement does seem to drive ratings and viewership. I just wondered if, as you know, you've seen this phenomenon happening, you know, with the networks that you oversee. If you think that this is a direction that all of media is going, is it only something you can create around specific things? Or how do you think this type of marketing and trying to create this fan engagement will bleed into the larger media marketing community?
Yeah, look, it's a really great question. And I do think that there is a trend in the general direction of fandom. And I think it's very logical because there's so much signal today. You know, we used to operate in a world where there was a finite number of networks and there was a finite number of ways to get content. And what was sort of, you know, it was a one-to-many broadcast, and what was given to you is what you could get, you know, and you didn't have a ton of choice. So in a world of choice, consumers are naturally going to gravitate towards the things that they are more passionate about. And as we know, and I won't, you know, belabor here, there's a lot more content being made as well. So there's more good content, there's more choice, and there's more ability for consumers to gravitate towards their passion. So I think it's naturally happening. With that said, I still think people use media and entertainment for different reasons. And sometimes we watch shows for just pure entertainment. Like, I just want to turn my brain off. I had a really hard day at the office, and I just need something on so that I don't think about and focus on work. And I think that's one use case, you know? Sometimes we use it for information and news and things like that. Sometimes we use it for really, really deep, engaged escapism, which I would put sort of Westworld and Game of Thrones in those categories. And then sometimes we use it to define our identity. And I think that's really the category that we're playing in more so, where the content is really critical, but it might almost be happening in the background. And the more important thing is what it says about who you are. And so often, our fans have to work really hard to find this content or even to consume it. You know, so a lot of our content is subtitled, you know, some of it is foreign, and they just have to work harder than the average audience to consume it, to learn about it, to share it with their friends. And it says something about them. It says that they're creative people, they're guides, you know, they're sort of innovating around what's interesting, and they tend to be at the front of trends versus at the back of them. And so I think a lot of what you're getting at starts with how we as people engage with media and entertainment. And certainly there's a trend to more passionate fandoms around content, but I still view the arena that we play in as something a bit of a shade over from a Game of Thrones, because in large part, Game of Thrones is still relatively easy to access, relatively easy to find, and it's generally designed to be approachable by a broader audience. And ultimately, most people will watch that show, and it will provide great escapism, and that will be enough for them. Then there's a small fraction that goes above and beyond and kind of listens to the podcast and engages more deeply around it. And by the way, I'm certainly one of those people. But then there's an even thinner shred that sort of defines themselves by what Game of Thrones says about them. And I think in our community, in our world, there's a much larger group of people that are basically using the content to make a statement about their identity. And so ultimately, I think what we're playing in is a world of some really interesting and powerful identity brands, like a Rooster Teeth or a Crunchyroll. And that's something we're definitely trying to capitalize on. And it's not easy. You know, there's a great article that was in the Harvard Business Review called Elements of Value. And it's this pyramid. And it talks about how different products and brands can engage with their audience and with their user base. And at the bottom of the pyramid is basically functional elements. You know, it's fun, it delivers value, it's useful in my life. And as you move up the pyramid, you know, there's all these higher order things like badging and heirloom, and all the way at the top is sort of like enlightenment, you know? And I think that, interestingly, a lot of the brands that we're partnering with do have this unique depth of relationship with the audience. And I don't know that there's just a way to create that. There's no magic formula. It takes, you know, authenticity, it takes time, and it takes a little bit of luck, to be honest with you. And so we're really trying to bring together those unique communities and build something really special and create a home for people that might feel a little bit more left out from some of the more traditional mainstream media content, which is not to say they don't consume it. It's just to say that that is a smaller part of their diet than maybe for the rest of the world.
I think in my whole career of interviewing people, which is actually quite long, you more accurately anticipated my next two questions in that answer than I've ever experienced. But because one, I was thinking about, you know, you definitely did describe a pyramid about, you know, you've sort of got broad audience appeal working up to fans who take that content and make it part of their identity. So that's sort of an interesting way to look at it. And then one thing you just touched on, but I wanted to ask you about a little more, is how possible is it as a provider of this content to drive that engagement? Is that something that you can do? Is that something that you can be strategic about? Or does it something that really has to take off on its own and then you just kind of surf it?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly characteristics that occur. I do think it's worth pointing out, like Game of Thrones is a great example, right? HBO is in the business of trying to reach a broad audience. And so they are, approaching a four quadrant strategy. They're going for young, old, male, female, and they're trying to hit all four boxes continuously. And I think when you're in that mode, you know, you notice that most people don't walk around wearing HBO t-shirts, right? There are people wearing Game of Thrones t-shirts for sure, but mm-hmm. most people are not wearing HBO t-shirts. And I think that is in large part because, HBO really stands for just sort of like quality, you know, excellence. It doesn't really say something about who you are to wear an HBO t-shirt. And I think people do wear Crunchyroll t-shirts, and people certainly wear Rooster Teeth t-shirts. And I think that is because those are brands that are specifically appealing to a thinner slice of the population. And so I think the first point is you can sort of define media brands by whether they're general audience or audience targeted. And so the first step to me is you kind of have to be audience targeted. And then the next step is, you know, are you actually creating that content? So like Rooster Teeth creates all of their own content. And for that reason, a lot of the value of creating that content, you know, accrues to them. And they are making things that are interesting to them. You know, the analogy that I use a lot is, and I've said this a few times since we've been talking authenticity, it's really hard to say, we want to make something that people is going to be totally beloved, you know? And so here's the formula. We're going to make it. But what you can do, and this is my analogy, is sort of being like that garage band where you just sort of play music that you like. And if people start showing up, that's cool. And it's possible that more and more people show up over time. So if you think about the Grateful Dead, like, they kind of did something that was very, very specific to them, but all of a sudden, a lot of people showed up over time, and I'm not sure that they really morphed or changed what they were doing to try to appeal more broadly. You know, they never got a lot of radio airplay. They never had that kind of pure mainstream moment. They were really just kind of doing their own thing, and more people started following them. At the risk of using too many analogies, I often think about you know, in Forrest Gump, when he just starts running and people just start following. And he didn't care so much that people did or didn't follow. He was inspired to do something. And I think a lot of these really successful audience-targeted media brands start that way, where it's a small group of people just doing something that they are passionate about. And it turns out that other people are passionate about that same thing. And certainly the internet makes it easier to find pockets of people that are, you know, passionate about narrower things. So I think there's a rising tide here. So it's kind of a long way of saying there are definitely characteristics, but I don't think that there's a formula. And so when it comes to Verve, we've really tried to partner with people that we think have the characteristics, and we made a conscious decision to not really do it ourselves. In other words, we knew from the very beginning that animation and science fiction and fantasy and so on were really interesting to us, but we didn't say, let's stand up our own set of channels. What we said was, let's go find the media brands that really understand these audiences, that truly care deeply about the programming and have empathy for the audience, and that are doing a great job already of super serving them, and let's bring them together under one roof. And I frankly think that was a decision rooted in some experiences that we had along the way at Elation here, where we were kind of dabbling in creating our own media brands and doing some different things. And so it was a big learning along the way to say, you know what, you cannot do this if you are not truly authentic to the audience and if you are not focused, you know, somewhat narrowly on that depth of engagement on a particularly thin slice. Now, what Verve can do is bring together a few of those thinner slices to hopefully make something that, again, is sort of better together.
Like half a cake or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just a nice, you know, when you go to a birthday party and they give you that piece of cake that you're a little bit embarrassed to be carrying around on the plate, like one of those.
Okay. And then another thing that I think that's interesting that you're saying, as opposed to going out and sort of trying to create those communities, we really invest in communities that already exist, which does seem like also a little bit of a very intelligent shortcut, right? As opposed to just trying to figure out how to create it from scratch.
Definitely a shortcut. And I also think, you know, it's part of I think it's deeply embedded in our view of the ecosystem, because what we recognize, you know, I alluded to this earlier, but I think it would be kind of sad if Crunchyroll type of brands didn't exist. In other words, if you went to Netflix just to get most of your anime, I do think there's something missing. And it gets back to that pyramid and how people define themselves and the relationship that they have to Crunchyroll and to each other through Crunchyroll. And so partly we're trying to support this ecosystem. You know, we sort of had observed, by virtue of operating the Crunchyroll business, that there weren't a lot of outlets for these audience-targeted media brands to take a little bit of the pressure off of themselves. You know, this idea that if you wanted to be a direct-to-consumer streaming service, you had to do everything end-to-end, I think is a really tricky place to live and, frankly, makes it really hard to survive and thrive. And so what we've said is, hey, do everything that you do well, and then partner with us, and I think we can do some things well that maybe you don't. So we can pick up the slack on the direct-to-consumer marketing and on the technology piece. And so Verve has offline viewing and broad access on all these different distribution platforms, and we continue to innovate and introduce new product features and recommendation engine and a lot of things that it's hard for our partners to get to. On the other hand, they're really great at cultivating a community, at building a brand, at making programming choices around their specific theme. And so I think that partnership is a really powerful one, where previously it was kind of a binary choice. It was like, do everything end to end or sell your crown jewels to Netflix and Hulu. And I think we've tried to soften the blow on that and created a little bit more gray in between.
Mm-hmm. And then one thing that you also mentioned along the way here is some experiential marketing. You talked just about being at C2E2. How do you guys incorporate experiential into just heightening that fan engagement?
Yeah, so I think back to the authenticity and the deep engagement with the audience, and it correlates with the idea that people are sort of defining themselves by these brands. So they are hungry for this direct engagement. You know, often, you know, some of the characteristics that I think define the community, they can feel alienated by their passion for some of this content. You know, if you're, you know, growing up and you're one of the few people where you live that's like a diehard horror fan or really, really deep into science fiction or anime, you might take some heat and criticism for that because you are a minority, you know, in the existence of your direct life. Now, when you go online, you're no longer a minority. You're part of this broader community. And I think when we create these experiences, or we partner with folks that are already delivering them, they become safe places to express yourself, both through your, you know, in terms of the identity that you've cultivated, but also to have it reinforced by others who are saying, yeah, I love this too. I feel really strongly about this. And so I think it's something beyond, you know, just, hey, I just want to see the creator of the content. You know, there's something really more enriching to the soul than that. So there's a couple different ways it happens for us. On one hand, we put on our own events as Elation, and I think we will continue to expand the portfolio of owned and operated events. We also work with our partners. So some of them put on their own events. So Rooster Teeth's a great example. They do RTX in Austin over 3 days, and Crunchyroll and Verve will have a really strong presence there. And then there are these broader industry events like Anime Expo or New York Comic Con or C2E2, which I mentioned, and we try to create interesting, innovative experiences there. And I think one thing that really makes us different is we don't go there to just have a booth and to say hi. We go there to create an experience and to allow fans to get closer to each other and to the content. So there's sort of this fan-to-fan connection and fan-to-creator. And I think our Verve Art Gallery is a great example of that. I also think as we continue to add content partners and get into sort of different spaces, it will open up doors for us to do even more compelling and enriching things at these various events. And I see that part of our universe as expanding really rapidly. And I think it's one of many ways that we're really different than, say, you know, a traditional broad market streaming service. I think commerce is another one of them. You know, where today, most of our individual partners have some type of commerce experience. It's very logical that Verve would eventually, similar to the content, aggregate those commerce experiences and offer another channel through which to sell goods and create an enriched experience for the audience. And so we really keep thinking about this sort of content plus community plus commerce experience. And I think today, Verve is just at the tip of the iceberg of that. But as our content genres grow and as the audience scales, I think we're able to really deliver on the promise of that content plus community plus commerce.
This is another question I think I should already know the answer to, but I don't, which is if I were to, you know, subscribe to the Verve bundle and I wanted to connect with other fans of, again, let's say Crunchyroll, is that community-based communication built into the platform, or would I need to specifically go on to Crunchyroll for that?
Sure. Well, it depends what you mean. So if you subscribe to Verve today, there are a bunch of community features on the Verve experience. You get an avatar, you get a unique name, and it's actually, I think, something that distinguishes Verve. Like when you sign up for an account, we randomly generate this kind of goofy name for you, and you can shake the app and keep generating names. But there is a community experience built into Verve.
Okay.
I think what you'll see with Verve and Crunchyroll in particular, because we are one company, is the barriers come down between those two experiences over time. So that they're, you know, I already mentioned that you can take your Verve account and link it with Crunchyroll and log in and vice versa. I think what you'll start to see over time is that there are those barriers break down further between commenting and watch lists and things like that. It's a little more nuanced with partners that are, you know, outside of our company because they have their own product priorities. But our goal is definitely to create the richest experience on Verve, and we will focus on whatever that means to the audience. And to date, we've spent a lot of time building a great suite of you know, content features so that watching the video content is as good or better than anywhere else. But I think over time, you'll see us focus a lot more on the community aspect.
What do you think is stickier for fans? Do you think them, you know, gathering some kind of identity by being passionate about a product, or fan-to-fan connection, finding a community that loves what they love, or is it just sort of a mix?
Well, I think some of those higher order things, you know, if the value of your product is just about utility, like I think Netflix is a great example. They have a really incredible lead on the marketplace, right? I don't know what their exact subscriber number is right now, 160 million or you know.
Something like that.
Greater than that. And I think for a lot of folks, it's like, wow, I don't know how anyone can compete with their budgets and with their product and technology and all of that. And no doubt they have a really powerful moat in that both technology lead and their content lead. With that said, I think that most people use Netflix because it's convenient, because it's cheap, because they have a lot of great programming. And if it turned out that that programming was inside of another app, I think most people would use that other app. Now, how realistic that is or not, you know, we can debate it. All I'm saying is I think that most people's affinity is just for the programming there and less so for that Netflix brand. And I think their loyalty is really to whoever has a great value and whoever has good content, which is why you see people switch around a lot and they'll go over here if there's a good show or over there. I think when it comes to a lot of our brands, there is a loyalty that goes beyond the content. And I mentioned RTX. I think that's a great example. One of the things that you realize really quickly when you go to RTX is the content is actually sort of in the background of that experience. And what I mean by that is it really is a lot more about a safe space to express yourself and to connect with other people that have that are like-minded than it is to, you know, meet the creator of so-and-so, you know, show. And so I think that higher order relationship with these brands is really powerful, which is deeply ingrained in the thesis of Verve and why we have branded channels and why we don't just, you know, just bring content together the way, like if you look at a Hulu, they're kind of doing everything they can to diminish the brands, the originating networks of the content, like NBC and ABC. You can't really find it there because, you know, I think.
Yeah, very intentionally they're doing that. Yeah,
exactly. And they're sort of thinking most people don't really care about that. And I think that's probably right to some degree. Most people don't have a ton of loyalty to NBC or ABC and Fox. Now, people do have real loyalty to Shudder and to Rooster Teeth and to Crunchyroll. And by the way, I think there are a few traditional networks that actually do have that kind of loyalty. And I think, you know, when you look at like an Adult Swim or a CW, I think those are unique networks. And CW is such an interesting example to me because they're someone who in the traditional ecosystem, they've struggled. And they haven't really hit on a lot of the metrics that the traditional industry was measured by, which is mostly scale, right? Like how big is your total audience and how many advertising dollars do you generate and so on. But I think in this new world where, you know, the measurement is really a lot more about authenticity and depth of engagement, I think someone like CW or Adult Swim, you know, they have a real leg up. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that traditional ecosystem continues to evolve. And certainly our hope with Verve is as that traditional bundle changes shape and probably shrinks over time. And my gut is that the networks that will be the hardest pressed are the ones that have the narrowest focus get sort of squeezed out. I think we're trying to create a really hospitable home here with Verve for those brands that do a good job of, you know, authentically delivering a deep engagement experience to their audience.
I think also just something that comes to mind with regard to Netflix is Stranger Things is what I think of, and this might exist, I don't know about it, which would be, you know, a robust fan community around Stranger Things. Now, they certainly, they brought that show to Comic-Con. They did a whole watch event. They certainly do events that are all about engagement. They created actually a pretty fun 8-bit game. So they do a lot of things, but I don't think that Netflix has tapped into, you know, the kind of engagement. I mean, to a degree, but they haven't tapped into the kind of engagement that we're talking about where these brands become people's identity or they're really sinking into fan communities around the content. So, and maybe that's like a next level for Netflix, because I feel like they're just moving so fast to push out content that they haven't, you know, they haven't really gotten there on the engagement piece of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's their priority today. It may shift over time. I mean, certainly they have programming that kind of begs for merch and different things like that. And I expect it to happen over time. But I still think that Netflix is, they're a broad audience offering.
Yeah.
And by virtue of being that, you're always going to sort of have to focus on the lowest common denominator to some degree. Mm-hmm. And so the same point I made about HBO, you know, I don't think we'll see a lot of people wearing Netflix t-shirts over time. And you might say, well, that doesn't matter. They have a good product.
They would wear Stranger Things, you know, t-shirt.
They would. But my point is, if a different network picked up Stranger Things, then people would just go there and watch it, right?
Yeah.
The loyalty is to Stranger Things. And so, you know, again, we're getting back to this kind of like, you know, pyramid of sort of affinity. I think Netflix is an incredible, incredible utility. I think to the degree that a network can create real deeper affinity with the audience and deliver higher order value, I think it makes you more resilient over time. But I also think it's a really hard thing to do. And it might be impossible if you're trying to, you know, Netflix's stated goal is for sort of everyone on the planet to have a subscription.
I was going to say global domination. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that might be at odds with this kind of affinity we're talking about. And that's fine.
Yeah.
That's what makes a horse race. You know, I think Netflix is doing incredibly well being Netflix. I think we're trying to do our best to be Verve. And that's a different strategy. I think at face value, people look at us and they go, oh, you're a video subscription service. And we say, that's one of the things that we're about. And it's certainly at the center of what we do today. But I think we're much more, and we certainly aspire to be much more. And I think that there is room for that. And frankly, more than room, I think that there is consumer demand and need for it.
Yeah. I mean, that's Something I wonder too is going forward, when you have so many brands, but people crave, I think, this kind of connection, if brands like Netflix or, I mean, I think HBO does it, and you're right, maybe not around the larger brand, but definitely around the shows, but, you know, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, et cetera, even, you know, ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, if they will move in a direction where at least on some shows they are trying to create this deeper connection, this deeper engagement than just this broad reach, because maybe we're at a point where there is, I don't think there will ever be no such thing as broad reach. I think we'll have the NFL and the Super Bowl and the Oscars and whatever, but there's so many other programs that you don't have that kind of breadth, so that you do need to be able to tap into some different strategies in terms of capturing the marketplace.
Yeah, I'm not sure those networks have a lot of choice. You know, I kind of think, like, if you're NBC and ABC and Fox, you're broadcast networks, right? I sort of feel like Hulu, Amazon, and Netflix beat you to the punch of being broadcast networks for the world as opposed to just the US. And so I'm not sure that there's a ton of room for more broadcast networks. And what I mean by that is,
no, definitely not.
General
definitely
audience.
Not.
Right. So I think everyone's going to have to sort of pick the audience that they want to go after.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure everyone's accepted that just yet, which is why I made the point that I think CW is in a really good position. They've always sort of been after a thin slice. They haven't really wavered. I think that's, you know, created some heartache for them along the way. But I feel like in the world that we live in today, you know, being audience targeted is really powerful, because I think a lot of the general audience potential is kind of, it's a little bit sewn up. So I sort of feel like everyone's going to have to make some determinations and decisions about who they want to focus on. Now, I'm not sure that it's just a decision. You know, we've been talking a lot about authenticity, depth of engagement. I don't think you can just say, okay, like, we're going to focus on so-and-so now without a real sense of who that audience is and without a depth of understanding about them. So I think we're really fortunate here that we had this amazing almost like starting point or launch pad with Crunchyroll and the understanding of that community and audience and how they interacted with this content to build from.
Right. So how do you currently measure your success, since you aren't using probably Nielsen numbers or that kind of measurement?
Sure. So I think a lot of it for us, you know, we look at a lot of different things. I made the point already that scale is one aspect, but I think when you're in an audience targeted business and you're focused on passionate fandoms, you accept right away that there is some finite, you know, you're not after that Netflix goal of every, you know, every person breathing should subscribe to my thing. We recognize that, and it's sort of a by definition thing about who we are. We don't want to appeal to everyone. I made the point earlier that we're attempting to be everything to someone, not something to everyone. So we accept that scale is finite, and we're frankly very comfortable with that. So we do a lot to measure ourselves more so in depth of engagement. And so
right,
that can be, you know, there's a financial component to that. There's like an average revenue per user. There's customer lifetime value. But then there's viewership things like view through, number of series watched, minutes spent per user on a monthly basis. And one of our hypotheses about creating a bundle was that we could do better than any of the individual services in terms of consumption and our relationship with the user and how much time they spend with us. But also when you think about a subscription business, churn. So if you're an individual service like Rooster Teeth or Shudder, you know, you're programming on a monthly basis and consumers have to make that monthly choice. Once you're part of the Verve bundle, then, you know, Shudder's programming is flowing in, Crunchyroll's, Funimation's, Rooster Teeth, we're programming Verve Select. And so we're all kind of helping each other to some degree. And I think it really mitigates that churn potential. And so, you know, our churn rates are lower, our minutes per user are higher. And I think those are the kinds of metrics that we're measuring by and that we hope to scale over time. It's a lot of, you know, depth of engagement, and frankly, monetization per user.
Right. So you're using this depth of engagement, this stickiness to keep subscribers so they don't churn. And that's sort of the reason to keep them so engaged, other than the fact that I think that that's also the point of your existence. But if you don't have any advertisers, right? Because I would think that if you could bring this kind of highly engaged viewer to an advertiser, they would love it.
Yeah, so we have a free service that has ads, and we definitely have a set of endemic advertisers that truly love our audience and what we do. And you can think of, like, you know, gaming brands and mm-hmm. fast food and things like that. With that said, we also have a premium subscriber base that is, you know, growing rapidly. And I think that there are experiences that we can bring to them that are native. So I don't know that we've been incredibly successful with this to date, but we are definitely starting through, you know, we talked about the experiential things that we've been doing. So through those events, we think that there are, so I'll give you an example, and this is an aspiration, but if you think of a brand like Razer, who does the gaming hardware.
Yes.
If they came to our events and demoed their newest hardware, I think that would be a big value add to them and a big value add to the community. And as the awareness of these targeted services like Crunchyroll and Verve grows, I think that so will the brand affinity for those services and desire to participate. Today, I still think we get a lot of, even, you know, the biggest service today of our partners is Crunchyroll. And it's definitely, you know, the awareness within the community of anime fans is extremely high. But I still, you know, in the outside world, a lot of people don't really know what that is. And I think, you know, to sort of go, it's a little bit tangential, but I do think that the various CMOs of these brands and the media agencies are going to have to get a lot smarter about where the tribes live to mm-hmm. more appropriately communicate, because I think that one-to-many strategy, you know, the just advertising on television, which has 100 million households, is going to fade. And you're seeing the scale accrue on services that don't have advertising. And then there are these thinner slices. And I think they're going to have to get smarter about where, you know, where the tribes exist on those thinner slices.
On the flip side of that, where do you guys advertise Verve and Crunchyroll and Rooster Teeth? Like, for example, it would seem like esports or esports arenas would be a great place for you guys to let people know about Verve.
Yeah, so we, you know, this goes back to authenticity. I think we have to be really smart about, you know, our audience is really savvy. They're younger. They're you know, very astute. They're tech oriented. You know, they can smell BS, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And we have to be really careful about ensuring that we're delivering authentic messages. So when we think about these things, we do a lot of partnerships. So we partner, you know, you mentioned esports, but also Hot Topic, Barnes & Noble, who has a really big manga section and does a lot of graphic novels. A Loot Crate, Japan mm-hmm. Crate. So all these partners that I think are doing a really good job of delivering some level of authenticity to their audience that feel like natural and logical partnerships for us. So partnerships is really key. Certainly we do a lot with our device partners, particularly gaming consoles. So PlayStation, Xbox, we try to do as much as we can with them. You know, we know that our community is living there. We do a lot of promotions. So we give away trips to Japan. We, you know, do things in partnership with our various channels to try to do things that they maybe couldn't do on their own. So I talked about the events. So I think we're really trying to think about ways to communicate. And we go to the communities, I should also mention. So for us, Tumblr, Reddit, those are places where the audience is living, and we might not be doing things that you think of as traditional advertising. You know, we're just kind of engaged with the community, right? So we have a big team here, an audience development team that is not so much pure marketing as they are just community engagement mm-hmm. And community involvement. And so I think we're tapping into things on a slightly more nuanced level. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of growth science going on here, and we think really deeply about how to grow the subscription business and employ best practices. But I think we're doing all of that couched in a really authentic way of communicating with the consumer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're almost out of time. So my last question is, where do you sort of see niche and premium SVOD like this going? What do you think sort of the next level for you guys?
Yeah, well, I continue to believe in aggregation. I think everything that I know tells me how hard it is for these niche services to survive solely on their own, meaning just running a service. by themselves, because mostly they are adept at creating content, building a brand, cultivating a community, and doing a lot of the things that media brands have done historically. And they're not quite as adept at direct-to-consumer marketing and product and technology. And so I think partnerships are key, but also aggregation. You know, consumers only want to pay for so many things. There's only so much room on the home screen of their phone for apps. There's, you know, a lot of friction to switching between apps and getting to content. And so I think, you know, diehard fans, super fans will continue to go to these owned and operated experiences. But I expect that we will see aggregation continue to grow. And frankly, we're not the only ones. We're sort of the only ones playing in our space. But if you look at like a Fubo, you know, they're a brand that's targeting a specific community with a specific set of offer, you know, set of channels, and trying to create a real brand oriented type of experience. So I think aggregation will continue. I think we will continue to build on depth of engagement and create unique experiences that, you know, the Netflixes, the Hulus, the Amazons either can't or won't do. So look to us to continue, you know, stepping into new and unique ways of interacting with our audience. And whether that's events or commerce or, you know, trips or, you know, different experiences, I think you'll continue to see us innovate there. And then on the commerce end, I think giving people different ways to interact with the content and have a deeper level of engagement. So I really view that, you know, it starts with the content and making the right choices there, but then it extends to this fan to creator relationship and fan to fan. So I think we'll continue building on all those legs of the stool and continue trying to expand this content plus community plus commerce strategy of, you know, being everything to someone and not something to everyone.
Okay, I think that's an excellent spot to wrap up on. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. It was super interesting. I could ask you 400 more questions, but I know you need to get on with your day. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. Kareem Taylor produced this episode. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate Lekire-Marion contributes to Daily Brief. Follow Promax BDA on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media platforms at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.